So I'd like to move into a story that will feel maybe quite juxtaposed against peace, but it'll make sense after I tell you a little bit more. So this story is actually called The Angry Buddha, and it's told by Thich Nhat Hanh, and it's actually an old Buddhist story. It's been around for a long time. So Miss Nguyen was a woman who practiced really regularly, 3 times a day, in fact. She would practice by chanting over and over the revered name of the Buddha. So Namo is the first word, and it means just sort of it's a reverent word, or kind of like a hallowed sense of that name. And then Amitabha, which is more like the infinite Buddha, the Buddha of light. And then Buddha is the last. So this was her practice, but the funny thing was that she was a very pretty angry person and kind of a mean person known in the town. And so one of the men in the town just decided he was going to point this out to her in a way that would you know, make sense to her, that it would really get to her. So he waited. He knew when she practiced, and so he knew when she was in the midst of her practice. So there was Miss Nguyen, and then, you know, she would ring her bell, as many of us would, and light her candle as part of her ritual, and then she would begin to chant, Namo Amitabha Buddha, Namo Amitabha Buddha. And there was the man outside her home, Miss Nguyen, Miss Nguyen. And she heard him, and she was getting a little agitated, you know, but she just decided, I'm going to ignore that. It's my practice time. So she just kept, Namo Amitabha Buddha. And he continued, Miss Nguyen, Miss Nguyen. And she was feeling some anger and agitation arising more, and she said, I must struggle against my anger. And so she kept, you know, chanting a little bit more through clenched teeth, Namo Amitabha Buddha, Namo Amitabha Buddha. And there came again, Miss Nguyen, Miss Nguyen. She couldn't stand it. She busted out of the room, and she opened up the gate, and she said, why do you keep calling at me? You know I'm in the midst of my practice. And she was very, very angry. And he said, how interesting. I've only been calling your name for 10 minutes, and you have been calling Amitabha Buddha for 10 years. Imagine how angry he is with you. So, anger is a part of our series theme. And today, in this series that we are investigating, transforming the 7 vices into virtue, today's is to transform from anger into peace. But I want to share a little bit about the origins of the 7 deadly sins, which is what this series is based on. So Evagrius Ponticus is who it's been traced back to, and he was one of the monks and nuns among that band of desert mothers and fathers who lived in the Egyptian desert as ascetics and brought forth some wisdom. And actually the church then took on the 7 deadly sins. It didn't really originate with him, though, because he drew those 7 deadly sins from pagan texts. So we don't know how old it really is, but he's often the one who's credited with it. And then over the years, it's been tweaked a little bit here and there. Somebody along the way added the corresponding virtues. And so in a way, that's what we're working with, is the basic vices or deadly sins with the virtues. And the reason why they were called deadly is because they were thought to be so much off, taking us off course, that they could actually kill the spirit or maim the spirit within us. So as we unpack these together, we look at, we all in our humanness are going to practice some of these vices. And for most of us, we'll see the value in transforming them. And so that's our journey, peace to anger. Anger to peace is where we want to head today. So anger has a really important purpose. Harriet Lerner, a long time ago, wrote the book, The Dance of Anger. Some of you may have read that before. And she talks about how anger can motivate us to say no to the ways that others want to define us and say yes to the inner self, to the authentic inner self within us. So what's hard about anger, though, is for a lot of us, we've been given these messages either by society or by our own families that it's not an okay emotion, right? It's not okay to have anger. And so it's not appropriate, or it's certainly not ladylike, it's not very kind. So then what do we do when we have this natural human emotion? What to do with it? And that's really what we're going to explore a little bit, because, you know, a lot of times what happens then is when people are taught that it's not okay to have it and yet you have it, they tend to push it down and try to suppress it in some way. And we know what that's like. I always love that metaphor of the beach ball being pushed down in the water. You know, eventually it's going to pop up. And so it's going to roll off your fingers in the water and it's going to pop up. And it's kind of the same thing with anger. It's, you know, if we keep suppressing it, it's one of the things that happens with depression. It's often considered a way of pushing our anger inward. And so obviously an explosion of anger is the outer, but the inner, it can be a sense of depression. So if we suppress that, that's not going to be healthy for anyone either. And if we let it go, like the beach ball that just flies up at any given time, then we could make quite a mess, right? We could have a big explosion of anger and make a mess of our relationships. Well, the latter is what I had experienced a few times before I started to learn a little bit better of how to navigate. And I was in a former relationship when this happened a couple times that, you know, I got really angry and you know, shared that verbally in a way that later I wished I would have said it differently, or it wouldn't have come out quite like that. And my partner at the time actually gave me some really simple and sage advice. She said, you know, couldn't you just back it up and notice what's going on inside of you? Certainly you have some markers happening that are telling you that anger is coming up or that anger is present. And, you know, do the conventional, you know, count to 10. And it was just like, that simple sage advice was like revolutionary for me. And it wasn't easy, but I started to really work with it. And then I noticed, I was really surprised, I would notice things like my breath became more shallow, or my gut felt tight, or I even could feel heat rising through my body. And so noticing those sensations, I could see that there was something building there, and I would count to 10. And then, you know, it really shifted for me how then I would manage anger and express anger in a way that was much more conducive to the well-being of a relationship and everybody involved. And so it was really helpful to me. And maybe, you know, I don't know about you, but have you ever said something and then you wished you could just take it back immediately? And it's hard to do. It's actually harder to take it back in a way than it is to manage our anger from the inside. Groucho Marx really said it best when he said, "Speak when you are angry and you will give the best speech that you will ever regret." Boy, that if that isn't the truth, as my father would say. And that, so there was hope for me in those moments, and I think there's hope for all of us if we tend to have a short fuse at times when we get pushed, especially by those typically closest to us. So if you tend to repress your anger, even those small irritations and annoyances can and will likely add up at some point, and they will either implode or explode. And so that's usually what most of us want to avoid. We can drop those old tapes that says anger equals bad and begin to notice and have generosity and compassion for ourselves and each other when we recognize that anger is a normal human emotion. It's part of the spectrum of our emotions. And so making peace with that, accepting that, not making anger bad, just becoming more skillful in how we work with it. That's the key. So one of the things that Harriet Lerner also says is that it's not so much that anger needs to be projected inwards and outwards, but that the fire can be used for good. She didn't say that part, I said that part. But what she said is that the important issue is whether we use our anger, or you can use your anger, as an incentive for greater self-clarity, to achieve greater self-clarity. That's the key, to allow anger, because it points us in the right direction. It calls us somewhere. And self-clarity is one of those places where we can go if we follow that pointer. So anger is a call to self-clarity. If we could even just begin to frame it that way, when it arises then, when it's present, we can go, ah, there it is, pointing me to something, some revelation, some greater level of self-knowledge. And when we use its fire in this way, it can lead us like a warm campfire gathering, you know, instead of an out-of-control fire that's going to cause untold damage. It's then just sort of a gathering place to go, oh, okay, I'm going to come closer to the flames. I'm going to move closer to those flames and allow them to warm me, to clarify for me, to give me some great gift like the fire does when we gather around it. So how we engage then in this incentive to achieve greater self-clarity can contribute so much to our relationships and how we interact then in our relationships, especially when anger is present. Anger can point us to needs that we didn't realize we had. And as we become clearer and clearer with our inner processes, I don't know about you, but what I have found that those moments where that sense of unmet need is present, if the more practice I get, the more I realize, oh, that need keeps coming around again and again. So it's one of those hot buttons, you know? It's maybe a need you didn't get met as a child, and so, or you develop some kind of core belief. So maybe there's a need for acknowledgement or a sense of significant contribution in some way. And so you begin to become aware of that. Ah, that's one of my areas, you know, where it gets pushed. And then I can be aware, ah, okay, I'm being beckoned to the campfire. I'm being beckoned to see more clearly by the light of that fire of anger instead of getting in it and being owned by it, you know. So there are needs, and also it can also illuminate the values that are especially important to us. So by going through the inward journey, we can begin to see, ah, this is something I really value, that I hold really near and dear to my heart. And so when I see in the world that, you know, children aren't being treated well or animals aren't being treated well, it just really gets my ire up, right? That's that kind of righteous anger for worldly issues. And that too has a place, of course. It can fuel our passion and our action. So it's really, I think, anger is really something that is the fire of anger, that elemental idea, one of the four elements, that it really has something to offer us. But it's important for the health of our own well-being and those around us, our relationships, that we allow it to, we allow ourselves to work with anger instead of it having us taking over. You know, when it takes over, it's that reptilian brain that is taking over, essentially. We'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute. So anger has a tendency to be defensive, you know, and there's more underneath that we can uncover over time. So the next time you feel angry, I want to really encourage you to ask yourself, what's happening inside of me? What's going on inside of me? And that allows us to buy a little bit of time, so we're not like reacting like a spark, you know, but we're allowing that fuse to move us eventually into peace, really. We burn away a little bit of that dross and the truth arises for us. So Rick Hansen is a researcher. He's known for, one of his books is called The Buddha's Brain, actually, but he's done a lot of work around the brain and meditation and how we work with all these things. He actually has an article called Train Your Brain from Anger to Peace. And in it, he offers some really nice steps, sort of how-tos of how to work with this in a little bit more detail. One of the things he mentions, the first one that he mentions, is kind of a strategic retreat. This idea of creating a little spaciousness, of spacious withdrawal. And so we can establish some inner quiet for ourselves in whatever ways that feels natural for you. And then to bring the situation to mind. So whatever it is that you're feeling reactive to, to just bring it to mind, to be in the spacious awareness and meditation in the presence of the divine, and allowing yourself to just witness it and be with it. He said, until it's like a hurricane in a sake cup. I love that image, you know, because you think of a hurricane is so big and powerful in a little sake cup. And it becomes that. It becomes that contained, really. It can become that contained with this kind of witnessing, this kind of bringing in the presence of spirit. And when we're at that point, we're able to then, in this process of the spacious awareness, in this process of strategic retreat, we're able to create the spaciousness from that limbic, that reptilian brain that is reactive, that fight or flight kind of reaction, that anger is sort of that knee-jerk reaction, right? That fire that we spew back when we're really, when we're hurt is where it comes from typically, or when we're in fear. And so instead, when we buy ourselves a little time, when we give ourselves a little spacious awareness, a little strategic retreat, counting to 10, it's so simple, but that really helped me. It was like that counting to 10, that's just enough time, really, a slow 10, 1001, 1002, moves us from that one brain, that reactive brain, into the frontal cortex, the more thoughtful part of us, the more human, skillful, thoughtful part of us. And that's where we can process in a way that begins to cool a little bit. It begins to become a little bit more peace comes in. It doesn't mean that fire is out. That's key, because I think for people who might have a short fuse, they think their passion's just going to be watered over. That's not true. That the passion is still there. We can still work with it. We can just work in a more skillful way. So letting us pause, letting us let anger be. You know, this is letting anger be, allowing, giving space to it. Let it be, like the Beatles song, let it be. You know, Ronnie Ong happened to perform the song for us, Let It Be, and this seems like a good time to pause and just imagine you're letting it all be as you listen. So let's watch and listen to Ronnie perform Let It Be.
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. And in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Thank you.
Well, big thanks to Ronnie for sharing that beautiful song. It was really nice. It was really nice to travel into the living rooms of our friends from Unity, isn't it? It feels very intimate to me. And I just love that song. I feel really moved, actually, by that beautiful song. And it's so perfect for this kind of self-compassion and compassion to extend out into the world. You know, just let it be, let it be. And then we can work with it. But let it be initially. Just let it be held. Let it be observed. Let it be what it is without judgment. And that kind of generosity that we can extend, like we talked about last week in our first week of this series. So I mentioned the first step that Rick Hansen suggests is this kind of spacious withdrawal or strategic retreat. And the second one is similar, but it's in like what happens during that time. So during that time, we drop our story through observation. And noticing our sensations, we begin to drop the story that we're telling. And we do that also by neutral noting, or labeling. You might have, if you've ever practiced insight meditation, you may have been familiar with this form of meditating. So there's a noticing of the sensation, but there's also, if you noticed anger is arising, we're in that witness state, right? So there's been a little bit of this kind of movement away, and again, it doesn't own us, it's not taking over, so we're just witnessing it. So when we just notice and note anger is arising, it feels so much more neutral, and we're not hooked in, you know? So it's not my anger, it's just anger is arising. And it creates a distance from the story because, you know, that source of the anger is always our perceptions and our story that we're telling, right? Our thoughts. It's not so much the thing that happened, but it's all the reactivity to it. It's what we told ourselves. So the story begins to fall away a little bit. And again, that shift from one brain to the other, it starts to occur for us. So whatever it is that, you know, Rick says, I who have been mistreated, disrespected, and harmed begins to fall away, right? That idea of I who have somehow been, you know, that ego has been harmed in some way, that begins to fall away because there's no real self to be injured. When we're sitting in the witness seat, there's not a sense of that I am the ego. That identification is beginning to fall away because we're identifying more with the spirit within us. And so from that place, we can be much more gracious, we can be much more skillful. And from that place, we can experience more freedom and more compassion. It helps us also to not get sucked into self-judgment. You know, if there's an old tape that says anger is bad, and then therefore, if I feel angry, it's not okay, we can begin to drop that. And so that begins to fall away when we're giving ourselves this kind of spaciousness, and noting the sensations and just labeling or noting the anger itself as it arises. And once that cover of anger is taken off, you know, once this sort of the cover is blown off and we can look in, usually it's those very tender emotions that are more present, like hurt or fear. Anger is the defense, the shield, but once it's taken off, it's those softer emotions that then soften us. And so it allows us then, and it's easier, you know how it is in a relationship, if somebody, in any kind of relationship, if somebody tells you, I'm really angry at you, it's like, oh, okay, so we just sort of like lock down, batten down the hatches, get ready, right? Here it comes. But if they say, I'm feeling really fearful, I feel really hurt, doesn't your heart just sort of melt open and you're ready to listen? So it's a very different kind of tenderness is the best word I can think of, or softening place that really opens up the way for a different kind of connection. The last thing that Rick Hansen suggests is invoking our community. I really love this one because a lot of times with anger, people feel alone in their anger or feel kind of isolated in their anger, which sort of perpetuates it and exacerbates it more. And so if instead we can open up to the community and recognize, hey, my Unity friends, my fellow meditators, people on the path, they're all working to be more skillful with emotions such as anger. And they are all encouraging me and offering me their support on this journey. And so if we invoke our community, the support of our community, even in just a prayerful state or a knowing energetic state, that really can open up the pathway for us as well. A couple other examples that I love are when we're in traffic, that we can be in the divine flow. We can be the traffic for everybody around us because we know there tends to be a lot of road rage out there. Maybe less now that there's less traffic and less, you know, hurry to get somewhere. But as we pick up our lives, as we begin to reopen the country, there's going to be more traffic on the roads. And we can come back into that in the divine flow. We can be the divine flow, that place for people on the road to be the traffic for them, to be the more graceful, easy, patient driver on the road that makes way, that opens up that channel. I've heard Felicia McBarton, our ministerial assistant at Unity, often talk about that. She has a long commute to Unity, about 45 minutes each way, and she will talk about being the peaceful place for others, to be the way, be the traffic for them, that divine flow. Another thing that can kind of get people's ire up is certain relatives or maybe even friends or others that you interact frequently with. But if you think about, you know, maybe you're about to go to a family gathering at some point or be with some of the people that in some way, maybe even it's online, people that kind of get under your skin. He suggests spending an hour, that's a lot, but any designated time that you decide, and holding compassion for that individual. And then see how you feel. Then see how you respond. It'll be quite different, I can guarantee. So by taking this more inner and more curious approach to our anger, we really allow anger to be present without trying to do something with it, like immediately express it or stuff it down, but just to be present as it moves, as it, and allow it some space. And then we have it, it doesn't have us. And we can use its power then for good. So if it is righteous anger, the sort of anger it triggered at worldly ways, at things that we're learning about in the news or that we see in our neighborhoods or that we just feel like are a true injustice, we can use that anger for good in a very similar and kind of skillful way, but also through action, right? So allowing that to be channeled into our passions, and then we can actually decide what kind of action do I want to take toward that cause, and then go do that, serve in that way. It's a beautiful way. It's a lot of the fire that is behind activism and activists on the front line that can use some of this peaceful cooling, right? And a lot of us that are on the spiritual path are really steeped in the sort of peaceful, more cool energy, but we could sometimes use a little bit more of that spark, a little bit more of that heat for our passions in the world. So there's that balancing act that we find. And really we can make great positive change with that. So as we begin to master anger, what we do move into is this beautiful quality of spirit that is peace, right? We begin to be the peace, to hold the peace, to embody that peace, that sense of calm and serenity even in the midst of the hurricane around us. We're able to sort of bring the hurricane into the sake cup so we can all then sort of discuss it in a way that it's just not wreaking havoc everywhere present. In peace, so when we are in peace, we are centered in spirit. You know, there is that sense of just really being centered in the divine. And when we are at peace, even despite raging around us, we can be in that kind of place. Like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. This story comes from the Bible in Daniel chapter 3. And the story is that King Nebuchadnezzar at the time had this enormous golden statue built. And he wanted everybody to bow down to the statue. And so he, you know, invited all of his precepts and his counselors and all the people around the land, the governors and all the people that held position. He invited them all to come and see the great golden statue that had been built. And he said, you know, when you hear the lyre and all the instrumentations, the drum and the string instruments, and when you hear all the orchestra of the sounds of the music, you are to bow down to the golden Buddha. I'm sorry, the golden statue, not the golden Buddha. That's another story for another era and another tradition. So everybody's to bow down when they hear this. And so all across the land, every language, all the nations and the languages, all the peoples are to do this. So for the most part, people obey it. But there are some astrologers that have the king's ear, some wise sages that are able to perceive what's going on throughout the lands. And they say, O king, I don't know if you realize, but you have some folks who are working in the area of Babylon, and as governor, or not governors, but they had a higher role in the government process. And these three, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they're not paying attention to this. When the music plays, they are not bowing down to the statue and worshiping in this way that you are suggesting we all do, demanding, commanding that we all do. And the king was in a rage, and he said, bring Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego to me, and I want to speak to them immediately. So as soon as they could, they brought these three. And the king said, when you hear the music, you will bow down on your knees and worship the golden statue. And all the music played, and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did not kneel down. They did not bow down. They did not worship. And the king was filled with even greater rage. And to add to it, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego said, we have no need to defend ourselves and the God that we worship. But the threat was, if the people all through the land did not do what the king had said, they would be thrown into the fiery furnace of blazing flames. And so Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego well knew that this was the punishment. And still, they stood by this. And the king said, you shall be thrown into the fiery flames. And he was so angry when they were saying, well, if, you know, our God comes to our defense and we survive, then you will know about our God. And if our God does not come to our defense, we still would not bow down to the statue. And now the king was just out of his mind with fury. And he called very quickly for the biggest men that he had, the strongest men that he had, to bind up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And they had all of their clothing, their long robes and their turbans and their trousers. And still they were bound, and they were going to be thrown into the fire by these big men. And they were as calm as could be. They were centered in God, in peace. And they were thrown, and then the king said, ratcheted up seven times the heat. And so they ratcheted up seven times the heat. It was so hot, and the king's command so urgent, that these big men that were throwing Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego into the fiery furnace were killed because it was so hot. And so the three bound down, fell down into the flames. But it wasn't long before the king, sitting on his throne, noticed something very odd. The three, but not just three. Weren't there three men, he said? Now there's four. And there's four, and they're walking through the flames. They're completely unbound and untouched by the fire. He can't believe it, and the fourth among them appears like a god. And he gets close, and he looks in, and he says, we let them out. This almighty God that they follow is saved them, is with them. And so out come Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and all the counselors and the precepts and the governors come close, and they can't believe what they see. Not a singe on any of their garments. No hair is singed. The three, they don't even smell like fire. And the king, who has learned little about anger and ruling in a violent and fearful way, says, anybody who blasphemies the God that these three follow, who from now on we will follow, will be torn limb from limb and their houses left in ruins. But still, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, untouched, end up being promoted in the province of Babylon. So this story, this very involved story, really shows us how when we are centered in spirit, when we are centered in that place of peace, when we become more skillful, we don't get burned anymore by the fire of anger. We can walk through it. It can be present, but we don't get burned by it. Somebody else's or our own fury cannot touch us anymore. It's there. It's present. We're not pushing it away. We become fire walkers. We're walking through it. And so it's that kind of transformation that is available to us as we allow anger to be that thing that helps us achieve self-clarity. And with that self-clarity, to land in that place of deep peace in us, centered in spirit like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And so we are at peace, still passionately devoted to our values like these three. So I want to invite you to own this with me as we traditionally close out together with an affirmation. Let's do that. That when this idea of peace comes and it's when anger is calling us into it, then peace comes as a part of that. And as we allow the fire of anger to do its good work within us, we produce a true sense of peace. So together, the affirmation is, I answer anger's call for self-clarity and I discover peace. Let's say that again together. I answer anger's call for self-clarity and I discover peace. And so it is. Bless you on this journey.